so easy to dismiss its ridiculous nonsense, the idea of a haunted house. After all, who in their right mind believes in ghosts? The thing is, what has happened when several people in the same place and at the same time claim to have had the same strange experience? Is it all a big hoax? Are they barking mad? I don't think so.
And we have some winners and we have some others that have contributed mightily. And if this book idea flies, there will be room for others who did not necessarily place in the top three.
Exactly. So
that would be fun. I really hope you guys can do it. It would be a fairly simple, I don't have to tell you, but just for our listeners, I think everybody would want to participate. I don't think you'd have any trouble getting rights for this. They'd be proud to have their work under the banner of Steiger and Steiger. That would be fun.
I think it's worthy of discussion. We'll have to weigh things and see. And if we, you know, are met with enthusiasm, I think it is worth pursuing. We certainly have the potential because, as you said so well, there are every year, you know, it's difficult selecting the art pieces, of course. And I suppose because we are writers, it's even harder. And I don't know, am I saying this the correct way?
It's even harder sometimes
choosing the stories because, you know, we only have three. And some are so close. And, you know, I was an English teacher on both the college and high school level for over 10 years. And there's part of me that says, you know, if this writer would put this here and this there and maybe rephrase this, this would be dynamite. But we can't do that in a contest, can we? We have to deal.
Boy, if they make the book, though, you could.
Yes, then we could suggest, you know, if you would just pry this from a different angle or just rewrite this. We don't want to, you know, put words in anyone's mouth, but if you just maybe revisualize this, revisit the scene. I mean, see it in your mind now and really, you know, what
sure.
did you hear? What
and
did you know?
I'll guarantee you 99% of the writers would just drool to get that kind of insight and counsel. They'd love that suggestion.
Well, it'd be cheaper than going to college, wouldn't it?
Oh, gosh. Don't go there.
I can't believe what college costs now.
Well, it's four years of
macro.
A party, too. Everybody knows it. It's all there.
Well, again.
Except for the hard sciences and some of the others.
Mm-hmm.
All right.
Well, you know, some of the stories are quite long. Maybe we should announce and then
dive in.
Reading,
sure.
Think?
Well, we can announce... number three, and read number three and work our way up.
Oh, that's an idea.
Okay. All right, you're going to read number three and then number one, and I'll do number two. How do you want to do this? Or do you want to split them up? I don't know. This is live radio, folks.
Yeah.
I mean, only 1,500 words. It's not that many.
No.
Okay, you go ahead. All right, number three. Our winner... And again, this is not to say that there might have been 10 number fours. We just don't know.
Mm-hmm.
But number three is The Old Dark House.
By Teresa. Would you like me to read that?
Or, well, we do have our honorable mention. Can we read four of these in an hour? I guess we can.
Oh, I think so. I think so.
All right. Well, what did you? Should we start with The Old Dark House then? Or do you want to start with the honorable mention? We should start honorable mention.
Well, that's what I thought.
Okay, we'll do that.
An honorable mention, I think we would choose The Residue, I believe we had.
Well, we had... We had No Vacancy.
No Vacancy, yes. Residue is right in
there. But No Vacancy got it by a nose.
I got it by a nose.
So,
why don't you go ahead and read No Vacancy?
Okay. All right, here we go. Honorable mention this year. It was earlier this month in October that I saw something quite strange and find myself even today wondering what or even who it was that I actually saw. Here, let me explain. I'm a self-employed contractor working mainly in what's oftentimes in the hot sun in the laborious field of construction. That said, I consider myself lucky to have landed this otherwise relatively easy job with good pay, doing some inside renovation work for a local old folks home here in the shadowed, peaceful suburbs of nearby San Antonio, Texas. I'd gone to work eager this one morning with a couple of assigned projects awaiting my attention, one of which was some general drywall repair in a bathroom in one of the many numbered rooms located along a narrow and dusty corridor in what is best described as a lonely and isolated section of the building. I say lonely and isolated because, other than the lady that hired me, I saw no one while walking to this quiet and dimly lighted worksite. Additionally, another commitment that waited was to remove and replace a section of old and musty and badly stained carpeting in yet another room located also along that same hallway. The kind of things I'm generally pretty good at doing, nothing complicated, and an excellent means of some easy cash, as I've said. Searching the numbered room signs above each door while walking down the hallway, I soon found myself facing the door to where I was to enter and perform the assigned drywall repairs. As I always do upon entering a new work area, I knocked briefly on the door before stepping inside. The wooden door swung easily inwards, and while standing there, expecting time to allow my eyes to adjust to any changes in light, and while still holding to the doorknob itself, I noticed it being a little different from the dimly lighted hallway itself. I then observed the room was as I expected to find it, nondescript with little furnishings inside. Standing there longer, I took note of how quiet it truly seemed to be here in this section of the building. Turning my head in the other direction, it was unavoidable that my eyes could see the white, old, white-haired woman lying peacefully asleep on a bed there at the far end of the room. Now, get this. This is very interesting. This is a true story now, okay?
Mm-hmm.
He walks into the room. He turns his head in the other direction, and he couldn't help but seeing a white-haired old woman lying peacefully asleep on a bed there at the far end of the room, her arms held stiff across her chest. Out of reflex, I suppose it was, I apologized, nearly whispering the same, and without expecting answer, backed quickly and quietly out the door into the hallway again, where I quietly and carefully closed the door behind me. I decided it best not to disturb the sleeping occupant, and in doing so, went in search of the other room and carpet project. Finding that room to be located a few doors further down the hallway, I entered, having every intention of returning later in the day to tackle the drywall job. A good hour into the carpet removal and replacement, the lady that hired me approached and asked how things were progressing. She was surprised, seeing that I had moved on so quickly to the carpet job, and asked if all had gone well on the drywall project. I told her that I was going to take care of that next, when I was sure that the old lady there on the bed was awake. I didn't want to be a disturbance to her. The lady standing there went silent. Becoming aware of this, I looked up into a questioning face, one that asked for clarification, saying, "There's no one living in this part of the building. They were all moved out to other rooms in other hallways months ago in preparation for major construction renovations. This had been deemed necessary for their comfort and their safety. Makes good sense, them doing that, I thought to myself, moving the old folks, I mean, but who then was that old, white-haired woman I clearly saw there on the bed? She looked asleep, but as we discussed this matter further, it got me to seriously thinking. Could it have been something entirely other than that? A woman asleep, I mean. I learned not only was this building an old folks' home, one badly in need of repairs, years earlier in its former purpose had been that of a mortuary for the county. Hearing that, the short hairs stood up on the back of my neck. I did return to the drywall project later that day, but only after peeking first around the open door, a door I left open, thank you very much. No old white-haired lady lying there on the bed at that time, asleep or otherwise. I did what I had to do to earn my cash, and then I got the hell out of that room as fast as I could. I find myself still wondering what it was I saw that October morning. Yet I know damn well there was a person lying there on that bed. All things being considered, I do believe in ghosts. Now so, more than ever. Okay. Very good. Thank you, Jerry. Good job, Jerry.
Jerry Bridges.
Yeah. Jerry Bridges. Honorable mention this year. And I didn't see that earlier, and so I read that cold. I apologize. I kind of got into it a little bit.
No, you did well. Very well.
Okay. Good job, Jerry. Good story. And you saw what you saw. No doubt in my mind. None at all. Okay.
Not at all.
Brad, we're going to go right through the break here. We may be able to get all four of these in. The Old Dark House is our third place winner.
We're going right to the break, okay?
No, we're going to go right to the story.
Oh, okay.
We're going to go right through the break.
All right. My mother always told me the story of living in a haunted house when she was a girl. Normally, I'm a cynic when it comes to ghost stories, but knowing my mother as I do, I'm forced to admit there may be forces at work in this world that we can't understand. It was the 1940s in rural eastern Kentucky. The steep Appalachian hillsides meant that most people lived in the dark, winding valleys below known as hollows. My grandparents owned a house on Wildcat, but my grandfather Jim, who normally taught at the local one-room schoolhouse, got a temporary position at another school. Back then in the mountains, it was normal for teachers to be assigned a new school every few weeks or months. Since they didn't own a car and the new job wasn't within mule riding distance. Now, another reason we appreciated this is, you know, this mm-hmm. is kind of earthy, but it has that feeling of truth to it. So the new job wasn't within mule riding distance. It was decided that they would rent something cheap that was close to the new school until it could secure a position closer to home. A few days later, my grandmother Lucy, with her two girls in tow, that would be my mother Erlene, 7, and Estelle, 12, rode the bus to look at a house they had heard from about relatives. It was the last house at the end of a long hollow. The next closest house, which was almost out of sight, belonged to the landlady. The house had no electricity or inside plumbing, which certainly wasn't unusual for those times. But it was roomy and clean and very, very cheap. Its long porch culminated in a little room that couldn't be accessed from the inside. You had to walk the length of the porch to go in by a separate door. On the outside wall of the little room, my grandmother noticed bullet holes. Below that, a big, dark red spot. "What's that?" she asked. "Nothing. It's nothing," the landlady said, and she sent her daughter to the house to fetch a bucket of soapy water and a brush. As my grandmother watched, the landlady scrubbed and scrubbed, but the spot just got redder. Finally, she had to give up, but my mother's family took the house anyway. After all, it was cheap. Mm-hmm. Just after they moved, my grandparents went to town and left the girls home to clean the house. Being normal kids, they got sidetracked, started playing around. Screech! suddenly they heard the screen door open. Their parents must have forgotten something. Heavy footsteps filled the other room. Estelle grabbed a broom, my mother grabbed a rag. Frantically, they started cleaning as they waited for their parents to walk into the kitchen. Suddenly, footsteps stopped. When they didn't hear voices, they went to investigate. Strangely, no one was there. They looked outside. Nothing. The girls began to get scared. When my grandparents got home, the girls told the story, but with children's imagination being what they are, no one thought much of it. That is until the noises began. That night, when they were all in bed, they heard something coming from the attic. It was a big, loud thud, like a falling body, my mother always said. This time, the adults heard it, too, and it didn't happen just once. It started happening every night. Soon, other noises followed. The sound of alarm clocks in the mornings, a deep gonging at supper, like the sound of a grandfather clock. Then one morning, the landlady's husband hollered out at my grandfather, "Hey, Jim, I was surprised to see you got electricity up there." "What do you mean?" my grandfather asked, knowing there was no electricity in the house. "I mean, I looked out last night and saw that little room on the end of the house glowing. I've never seen such a bright light." After that, my grandfather started asking questions. He soon learned that years before, an old clock peddler had gone door to door up the hollow, but he was never seen coming back out. Rumor had it that he'd been murdered and robbed at the last house on the hollow. The neighbors claimed that nobody had lived in that house for years, at least not for very long. My grandparents decided that grandfather would finish out the week, then they would go back home. That night, my grandfather stepped out on the porch. Now, as I say, this is earthly in the country and days past, but to relieve himself before bed, there was snow. Suddenly, my grandfather began screaming, "Lucy, Lucy, bring the lantern quick. My grandmother ran out. What is it?" My grandfather grabbed the lantern and waved it around, searching the snow. His face was white. "Somebody walked right up in my face," he said. I could see his outline getting closer and closer, but he wouldn't say anything. Out in the yard, they couldn't believe their eyes. The man had left no footprints. Immediately, they went inside, started packing. They left the next morning. No job was worth that. The landlady, they heard later, was unable to get anyone else to live in the house. Eventually, it was torn down, and no other house was built on that spot. Submitted by Teresa.
Nice job. Very nice.
So the spooky old house.
The old dark house. And there is, and I do have a video of that. It's a 30s movie.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
I'm sure it was just a coincidence here, though.
Oh, yeah, yeah. I mean, it was an old dark house. Here again, you know, the honesty of being in the country, the old peddler and so forth. And again, if one could see if you had filmed this, you know, you could make it very effective, very with the thumping and the bumping. And, of course, you know, it couldn't help reminding me of my old farmhouse that I grew up in with the thuds and the doors opening and closing and so forth. So,
you always had that in your life, strange things.
Always, always. The other one, supernatural bullying is our second prize, and that was a lot like my childhood too, except my wasn't negative. My supernatural visitors were not mean, but in supernatural bullying, that is a very eerie account, and if you project yourself into the text, you can just see how frightening it would be as a child. You want to read that one,
sure,
Jeff? Or
all right,
two?
Yeah, look forward to this. All right, let's enjoy it together here. Supernatural bullying. Do you go trick-or-treating each year? I never have. To some, Halloween seems like harmless fun, but during my childhood it was no benign trick, let alone treat. As Halloween loomed back then, I became terrified. I rarely slept a wink during the watching and witching hour. Imagining evil and grotesque beings on broomsticks flying outside, bound somehow to work their insidious machinations inside as well. It may sound like ordinary childhood fears, monsters under the bed, and so forth. Good reason to fear the improbable, or indeed the seemingly impossible. My home back then was a late Victorian house out in the wilds. Successive owners had removed the original features, a house without a soul somehow. It was a habitually gloomy place, even in broad daylight. During the winter months, the heating would make the pipes rattle and the floorboards creak. But there were also inexplicable groaning noises and other strange, unearthly sounds. Those things would scare any young child. It contained more evil nothingness. I hated the stairs. They were enclosed with a door at the bottom. The walls were papered with a largely black cityscape that reflected hardly any light from the small window at the top during the daytime. The light bulb wouldn't always work. If you turned it on from the bottom, not always. Vice versa, if you tried the switch on the landing, not always. It was a horrible feeling, thinking someone or something was following behind you, and frequently there was. I'd dash into my bedroom, dive into the bed, dreading the time that Mum would come to tuck me in and kiss me goodnight because of the fear of being left alone. It was a shadowy room, even in the dusk of summer evenings, the deep red, brown, and orange curtains giving the spooky impression of changing shapes. As time went by, it became not just a twilight visual abomination of sorts that forced my head under the blankets, but an actual place of torture. My first memory in that chamber wasn't connected to my parents, but to the entities who visited. I would see forms with no faces, dark outlines with blind eyes looking over my cot. They would pull my blankets down. I remember feeling so cold because I didn't know how to pull the covers back up. I wasn't scared of them at that point. As I grew a little older, however, the night, the dark, started to terrify me. Unlike during my babyhood, I kept my eyes firmly closed as an older child then, frightened stiff of what I might see. Once the household was asleep, and largely only then, I would hear a high-pitched whining noise, slowly becoming louder. I knew I couldn't escape. The eerie wailing sound would slowly dissipate and morph into the moaning of the winds through the trees outside, then into babbling voices increasing in volume until deafening, enough to drive you insane. That in itself was gruesome. More was to come. They didn't go about things quickly, rather slowly tormenting victims. They would paralyze me, silence me, and leave me in that state for many a while. After that, pure silence, and the dread of every single frozen sinew and muscle encompassed me. It, they were coming. Incrementally, haltingly, they would ease my bed covers down, first off my face, over my nose, chin, down the line of my neck. There, help, someone help, and then chest, toward my stomach, please help, groin, no, thighs, knees, leave me alone, ankles, oh God, please no, toes, no. The touching started then, creeping. Multiple fingers and hands fondled, grabbed me over and over, sometimes tickling me again and again until I felt physically sick, retching out of my mind with fear, passing out eventually. Eventually. They never physically hurt me, but due to their mental torture, By the age of 8, I was so anxious and sleep-deprived that I pulled my hair out, leaving bald patches. I behaved in other weird ways, too. I never told anyone, however, thinking that adults wouldn't believe me. Children were to be seen and not heard back in those days. These things continued through teenage years into adulthood, following me wherever I lived. But I haven't had such intensified experiences of late. The odd thing happens, though. Most notably, one night in the winter of 2011, my friend Elaine, who attends a local church, asked if we could discuss a section of the Bible concerning Satan, the devil, to ascertain my thoughts. I'm not religious, but I studied the Bible. She sat adjacent to me and started reading. On reaching the words Satan the devil, at the exact same time, a bulb in the brass candelabra hit the ceiling and floated down slowly, still lit, landing with its tip facing outwards between the two of us, as if it had been exactly placed. I turned to my shocked friend and said, "Now do you believe me?" The dark doesn't terrify me now, neither does Halloween. It's been a long road. I guess you become hardened to it in the end. Ultimately, I think that ignoring these evil ghosts, not showing that I'm scared, even when I am, is the answer. Like bullies in time, they give up if you don't respond. Those thoughts of further monstrosities on Halloween back then, the witches on their brooms, subjecting me to some other form of ghastly torment, was unbearable. But strangely, nothing did happen on that night. But on this Halloween, if you hear anything in your bedroom, if you feel an invisible hand over your mouth, lie very still. Most of all, keep your eyes firmly shut and don't bother screaming. Though, of course, I hope you'll never have to. Kind regards. Submitted by Sasson Hahn, H-A-N-N. Thank
well
you.
Well done, Jeff. Well
Thank
done.
You. That was quite a story. Wow.
That's quite a story. As I said, I had, you know, as I've explained before, you know, our house was built on the site of the old stagecoach stop. And all the legends with it, Jesse James, the Dalton Boys, everything built around it. And, of course, I didn't hear those stories until I was much older, but by the old-timers in town. But as a child then, I just knew that these people would walk through the room every night, stop, and sometimes look at me. My sister, it was a big room, a big country house, and my sister, little baby sister at that time, you know, very young. But, you know, as we laugh now, kind of with, kind of a dry laughter, that's why we're both insomniacs, I guess, today, because we remember just being continually awakened at night, you know, by these. But they weren't cruel. They're like this, you know, they were tormenting that young man. But it was remarkable because, again, the sound of the thuds, the walking, the heavy feet, the doors opening and closing, even when we tore that house down and built another, but on the same site, the manifestations continued. The thumps, the bumps, the seeing shadows walking. And the most remarkable that I will always remember, as if I don't remember the visitations at night, but the sound of a stagecoach or a wagon in a team of horses coming down our long lane. Now, not every night, but enough. And I always remember getting up and seeing Mom looking out the window, my sister looking out the window, and there it is again. Now, we never saw it, but we certainly did hear that stagecoach coming down the lane.
Yeah, very nice. Stagecoach. Wow. Haven't heard one of those in a long time.
No. And
not,
of course,
I mean, in the movies you do, but
yeah. And again, people say, "Well, how would you know?" Again, though it sounds like I'm older than dirt, You know, I remember farming with horses. I remember the wagons. I remember the wagon that, you know, we took into town, 2 miles into town and so forth. So all of this, this incredible technology that everyone takes for granted now, this didn't start. You know, I grew up in the 30s and 40s, and, you know, we finally got an old tractor, iron seat, steel wheels, no rubber, you know, just a putt, putt, putt. But I remember clearly my dad clicking, you know, and the horse move ahead and the horse stop and the horse do this. That's a part of my childhood. So I do know what horses and wagons coming down the lane sound like.
Now, that's a neat thing. What a nice thing to have. And the sound of a steam locomotive, of course, in the night with the whistle.
Mm-hmm.
That's nothing like that either. I heard that just once or twice, and it was a fluke because there weren't really any steam locomotives around when I was a kid. But they still ran them, I guess, on exhibitions and things, and you could hear them at night. And what a sound.
Wow. Oh, I remember, you know, lying in bed hearing that sound and saying, someday I'm going to be on one of those trains. It was a haunting, yet comforting sound, strangely comforting. Anyway, we have a first prize winner, quite a remarkable story, called Book in the Corner by R.G. Harris. Do we need to take a...
No, we all right, let's see. There's him, where's
it? Maybe you better catch up.
Let's take a break here. We'll take our 40 break and get that out of the way. If you can do that, Brett.
Mm-hmm.
And we'll come right back. Our number one winner this year.
Book
top prize.
In the Corner.
Book in the Corner.
Sorry.
No, it's okay. You already said it. And we are going to have fun now listening to Brad read this one. Book in the Corner. That sounds very promising. They all do.
It is. It's a good one. They're all good ones. But this is our choice for the winner. Number one winner. The summer of 76 was not a good one for me. I was living at the Geronimo Hotel, Fleabag, Mecca for Tucson's transients. I was working sporadically as a laborer, as well as taking some classes at the nearby University of Arizona. The only people residing at the hotel seemed to be retirees who hadn't saved enough, criminals, heroin addicts, and people with minimum wage jobs who couldn't afford to live elsewhere. One day, while waiting in the lobby for the rickety elevator, which I hoped would take me to a room on the third floor, a gaunt, shiny-eyed young man accosted me. He extended his hand and smiled. "Hey, man, my name is Phil. Can you do me a big favor and loan me $2? I can pay you back in a couple of days." His voice was soft but had a nervous edge. I hesitated about to say no, but something about Phil made me change my mind. Perhaps it was his emaciated appearance, which caused me to feel pity, or the luminous intensity of his pale blue eyes. "Thanks, man. I'll pay you back in 2 days," he said as he pocketed the bills, headed toward the brilliant sunlight. I never expected to be paid back, so it was quite a surprise to see Phil 2 days later hurrying toward me in the lobby, $2 bills clutched in his skeletal hand. "Here you go, man. Thanks for the bread." Surprised by his unexpected honesty, we exchanged pleasantries for several minutes. He seemed to be both friendly and intelligent. I invited him to my room. There the conversation continued, and we talked on a number of topics. After a while, Phil seemed to become bored, somewhat distracted. He then revealed that he was so thin because he practiced fasting. "Why do you fast, Phil?" thinking he's already skinny enough. He hesitated, and then with a burst of excitement related to me how fasting made him more sensitive to the world of spirits. He also said he shot up cocaine and heroin sometimes for the same reason. I tried to steer the conversation elsewhere, and Phil, seeming to grow agitated, his bony jaw slightly on edge, spurted out, "Demons! I talk to them, and they tell me a lot of stuff. Things that would blow your mind." It was then that I arose abruptly and told Phil I have to write a paper for class. Nice talking with him, but I should get started. He could probably tell I was creeped out. After Phil left, I sat in my wooden chair and looked around the roach-infested room. The narrow metal frame bed with a thin, hard mattress. The ancient writing table, scarred with age, were down on their luck tenants, wrote letters to a lost love, or perhaps scribbled suicide notes. Several weeks passed, and between my work and studies, I'd largely put the strange conversation with Phil out of my mind. I was taking a couple of courses during the summer to gradually build enough credits to graduate. Some days I worked in the sweltering heat doing landscape work, the hot desert sun shining like a little inferno on the clear, merciless sky. Then late one night I was awakened by someone pounding on the door of my room. I got out of bed, slipped on some jeans, and groggily made my way to the door and opened it. There stood Phil, looking wide-eyed, frantic, clutching a book in one hand. Strands of long blonde hair were plastered on his sweating, thin face. "What's going on?" "Sorry to bother you, man. Can you do me a big favor?" He thrust the book in my hand suddenly. "I can't keep this book. I got to get out of here and to travel light," he's telling me. "I was kicked out of my room. Could you keep this book for a week or two? It means a lot to me. I'll be back and get it soon after I get settled." "Okay, Phil, I can keep it for a while, no problem." I was relieved when he left. I no longer had to look at his skull-like face nor gaze into his intense, lost eyes. I heard him making a kind of scuttling sound like a tall insect as he made his way down to the crypt hall. I was curious enough about the book to examine it. It was a strange book. Perhaps privately printed. It was solid black and appeared to be at least a century old. There's no title, no author listed on the cover or spine of the book, no copyright page, nothing. Opening the book at random, I read a few pages. It spoke of wise ones arising from the earth plane and joining the dark disciples to wage a war on behalf of Beelzebub. I didn't want to continue reading the weird book. Reading the stuff sent major chills down my spine. I carried the book to the corner, dropped it on the worn floor. Weeks passed by, and Phil never showed up, and the book lay in the corner of my hotel room, largely forgotten. Then one night, after fighting the heat and noisy traffic, I managed to fall asleep, a restless sleep. Suddenly, I was wide awake, and I glanced toward the corner where Phil's black book lay. Something stood there that had a human form, but it wasn't human. It was like a blue mist, only with glaring red eyes. The thing had its eyes locked on me. They emanated pure hatred and malice. I was shaking as I hurriedly threw on some clothes, rushed out the door, down the fire escape, into the street. My mind was frozen with fear. I somehow managed to walk down Euclid Avenue to an all-night diner and stayed there. A cup of cold coffee before me, trying to gain control over my fear. I stayed there until daylight. I managed to force myself back in the room much later that day. I walked directly to the corner, picked up the book off the floor, and carried the thing as if it were a dead rat to the dumpster and tossed it in the trash. Mm-hmm. Somehow I managed to get by the next few days without incident. I never looked toward the corner, tried not to think about the disturbing thing I had witnessed that night. That damn book was in a landfill, keeping company with the rats and maggots. On the fourth day after the appearance, while picking up my mail in the hotel lobby, I was shaken yet again. The hotel clerk, who was a rather nosy, unlikable sort, seemed to have something he was itching to say. Did you hear about what happened to Phil? He was shot dead Thursday night while trying to burglarize a house on 4th Avenue. I mumbled something as I left the lobby. Instead of going to my room, I went for a long walk and tried to wrap my mind around the fact that Phil was killed the same night that I'd seen that strange being glaring at me from the corner. Was it a malevolent spirit arising from the black book? Or was it Phil's attempt to somehow reconnect with his book and say a kind of goodbye to this life? Submitted by R. G. Harris, and our selection as first place prize winner.
Well, beautifully read, first of all, and secondly, another story. It must be millions, tens of countless stories of the strange, of the supernatural, of the spirits not quite ready to leave yet. That's
not
fascinating.
Quite ready to
fascinating. These are really good stories, and they are. I hope that you can do it. I for next Halloween, just perfect. Halloween's a
wouldn't
tough season.
Wouldn't it be great the next Halloween in order to? Yeah. As well as having a contest, wouldn't it be neat if we had the first book on sale?
I was just going to say that Halloween is probably the toughest season to bring books out.
Yes.
Think about it. Romance books on Valentine's, and you guys have been around the block more than anybody else, and I mean, this is a masterpiece of a Halloween book, especially with the art sprinkled through it.
Mm-hmm. If we could combine the two, I think it would just be a Halloween treat for everyone.
Well, I give you total permission. This is getting me on the same train to nowhere I was on with Christmas Miracles, although they finally came through with a part two, I guess. Kind of.
Well, I'll have to tell you about that.
Yeah.
We'll send you an email, okay?
I got it, yeah. Wow. Well, did you have
can't
any...
can't always get what you want.
Yeah, that's for damn sure. Unless you've got enough money in the bank.
Indeed. Well, this has been a wonderful Halloween program in my humble estimation.
Sure. Did any of the little kitties come to the castle this year? Did you have any?
No, we didn't. I guess that
any teenagers with guns?
A dark and foreboding appearance.
Yeah, well, it is that. Well, it's a beautiful pastoral setting, and I can imagine. Well, did you? I guess I should have asked. Did you lower the drawbridge? I mean, kind of makes a difference.
I'm embarrassed to discuss.
You kept it up. You didn't lower the drawbridge. You've done your thing. We've done our thing. That's it. Okay.
In a previous year, we did a magnificent Halloween for the little trick-or-treaters. I mean, we had trees talking. We had music playing from every bush. We had strobe lights where it looked like ghosts were in the attic, spider webs all over. Sherry was there with her cauldron handing out treats. And we haven't had any visitors
since
Halloween. I guess we were too good, I guess. It's funny, you know. It's like a situational comedy, you know. Where
you went over the top.
Went over the top, and it was so interesting to see the little kiddies the next year just avoiding our house. You know, that's life. Funny. Well, we just laugh at it. We were laughing at it again tonight.
Was it the razor blades and the apples that did it?
No. We had wonderful treats for the kiddies. Anyway, it makes a funny story to share with people. Proud of myself. We even, one of my good friends had a business in another town, and he'd been with me on so many real haunting cases, but he was phoning to talk to Sherry about, what are you doing now? What are you doing now? Because he was a great one for making big displays as well. I have a cousin in California whom I used to scare the heck out of on Halloween, and he's carried on my tradition. He really does it big in his house. He just has enormous. He's gone beyond me. So I don't know if he's finally scared all the kids in his neighborhood too, but I guess that's the Viking tradition.
That's funny. Well, it's been a grand one. Thank you, both, and all of you folks out there, and all the entries, wonderful people behind the artwork and the writing, and I hope all of you have had as much fun as we have. And we'll be back again next year. And maybe some publisher will get smart enough to do this book.
Well, as they say in the New Age community, focus on it and it will manifest.
All right. I thought it was manifest on it and it will focus.
Well, one or the other.
All right.
Never can get that straight.
Good night, Lady Sherry.
And she says good night and sends love to you. And
thank you.
We send love and happy Halloween to all of the wonderful listeners. And thanks again to all the individuals who entered the two contests. They were all wonderful and well done.
Indeed. All right. Get some sleep. Thank you, too. Be well.
Take care.
Okay. Good night.
Good night.
And my thanks again to all of you. I hope you had a good time tonight. We'll be back, tomorrow night again. And we'll talk soon. Take good care. Get a good night's sleep. Night.